The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to depart from our usual format of interviews with different personalities and different figures of excellence in the field of complementary and alternative medicine, nutrition, integrative medicine, and so on. We're going to return to our format of clinical focus podcast dealing with specific subjects. In the past, we've covered various subjects like Alzheimer's disease. We've talked about diabetes. We've talked about natural protocols for urinary tract infections and so on. And you can find these at drhoffman.com. We have a convenient landing page, which is an index. That's a new feature of our podcast selection, so that it can help guide you to the podcast that corresponds to your interest. If you want a podcast about a certain person, you can go to drhoffman.com, go to the podcast index page, and you can look up Dr. David Perlmutter, or you can look up Dr. Stephen Sinatra, or whoever you're interested in hearing, or you can look it up by subject. So today's subject has to do with sleep, and how this clinical focus came about is that I recently was invited to speak at a conference, which is a sleep conference. It's a conference that has to do with treatment of sleep disorders, in particular sleep apnea. And knowing that I'm a medical nutritionist, they said, could you please deliver a lecture on the subject of nutrition and sleep? And so initially I thought, well, you know, there's not very much to say about nutrition and sleep. You know, make sure that you have warm cookies, warm milk and cookies, and you'll sleep better. Or eat a big turkey dinner, and you'll fall asleep on the couch watching the annual Thanksgiving football game. There's not a heck of a lot to talk about in relationship to nutrition and sleep. But actually, there is a whole lot to talk about it. I've been researching it over the past few months, and I've come up with literally dozens and dozens of articles that link nutrition to sleep. And so in this podcast, we're going to take a look at some nutritional considerations. And this, keep in mind, this podcast is not about, you know, what's the new miracle sleep remedy, you know, some new magical herb. We're going to talk about mostly the effects of diet on sleep, and also the effects of sleep on diet, because you see, it's actually a reciprocal relationship. Diet and sleep, it's a bidirectional relationship. Diet affects sleep, and the sleep affects the quality and quantity of sleep affects diet. And we'll go through some of the mechanisms by which that occurs. The question is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? When it comes to, if you have sleep problems and you're suffering from obesity, we know now very clearly that there's a link between sleep deprivation and overweight. And the question is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Is overweight a condition which inherently disturbs sleep? That is a distinct possibility. Or alternatively, when you don't sleep adequately, when you have shift work, you don't get enough hours to sleep, do you tend to gain a lot of weight? And so both are true. It really is a reciprocal relationship, and it's hard to know which came first. So there's this year, you know, fortuitously, you know, I picked up this subject. And I said, well, you know, where's the information? In January of 2015, there was a big article and a corresponding editorial in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And the editorial was entitled, Sleeping More to Improve Appetite and Body Weight Control, Dream or Reality. It's a little bit of a play on words there. They get kind of cute writing titles of editorials. But Sleeping More to Improve Appetite and Body Weight Control. Well, they're referring to a study that is in that January issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, America's most authoritative source on the subject of nutrition. And one of the things they say there is that, quote, results observed in this well-powered study are consistent with an accumulating body of evidence showing that short sleep duration is associated with excess weight and higher food intake. And in the study itself, the study is called Habitual Sleep Duration is Associated with Body Mass Index and Macronutrient Intake and May Be Modified by Genetic Variants. So they throw in another element into this, which is that some people are maybe more genetically predisposed to sleep effects on metabolism. In other words, maybe there, you know, some people, they could sleep less, they could have sleep deprivation, they don't get fat, they don't get insulin-resistant metabolic syndrome. This study suggests that there's a certain percentage of the population, a high percentage of people who may be prone to insulin resistance, prediabetes, syndrome X, and obesity, where not enough sleep is a triggering factor. So I'm quoting from the study, they say, longer habitual sleep duration could ameliorate the genetic predisposition to obesity via a favorable dietary profile. And they even kind of tried to nail down what type of food gets in the way of sleep. They say that in younger individuals, it's too much in the way of saturated fat and meat protein. In older individuals, over the age of 50 or so, it's too much in the way of carbohydrate calories, particularly high glycemic index refined carbohydrates. So the mechanisms for that are numerous. There's numerous mechanisms that are involved, and we're going to take a look at some of them. Sleep can impact diet, and diet can impact sleep. So the mechanisms include, if you don't sleep enough, you have decreased insulin sensitivity. In other words, you become insulin resistant. That's been shown that even just a few bouts of sleep deprivation cause healthy adults to become more insulin resistant. They become pre-diabetic, and restoration of sleep normalizes things. Also, interestingly, when you don't sleep enough, you might think, well, gee, I'm awake longer, and I'm going to burn off more calories, right? So you get skinny. No, in fact, you get fat, because when you're awake longer, you have decreased energy expenditure. Did you realize that sleep is actually a very active metabolic state? It involves a lot of energy. You're lying there doing nothing, so it seems, but it's actually a time of profound brain activity and repair in your body. It's energy intensive. When you don't, when you get too fat, you also get mechanical obstruction around the throat. And that can cause sleep apnea, which definitely interferes with sleep. When you are eating a pro-inflammatory diet, you have increased cytokines. You have elevated cortisol from the stress of not sleeping, or perhaps you are stressed inherently and the high cortisol prevents you from sleeping. That's a chicken and egg phenomenon, because sleep deprivation raises your cortisol, but also if you have a high cortisol, you don't sleep as well. How do we know that? People who get prednisone, that's a drug that is a synthetic version of our body's own cortisol, it is notorious for causing sleep disruption. It interferes with melatonin. You get, obviously, you know, I think you've noticed this phenomenon. If you stay up really late, that's why late night TV is replete with all those commercials for takeout pizza and delicious foods. And now you can just reach for your iPhone. There's an app for it, and you can have the stuff delivered. You get increased appetite. You have elevated hormones like orexin, which is associated with appetite. Hypoglycemia may occur if you're eating too much sugar, And what happens is that people who consume lots and lots of sugar before they go to bed, they can fall asleep, but sometimes they'll wake up a few hours later with a reactive hypoglycemia. Many of my patients who get on a lower carb diet actually end up sleeping better. They sleep more normally because the roller coaster effect of blood sugar does not awaken them at 2 in the morning with a hypoglycemic episode. And what happens when you're hypoglycemic is it triggers activation of your sympathetic nervous system. You get a big output of adrenaline when your blood sugar goes low. And you get a big surge sometimes of cortisol, which is a stress, the body's way of coping with the stress of hypoglycemia. That's what happens to diabetics who use too much insulin. One of the things that happens too when you don't sleep is, it's actually been demonstrated, is you get increased sensitivity to food stimuli. You actually become more acutely attuned to food cues when you are sleep deprived. All this is factored into genetic predisposition. And oh, by the way, have you noticed that the food choices you make at 8 o'clock in the morning are made in the light of day with complete sobriety, and the food choices you tend to make later at night, and this is just a fact of life and a fact of behavior, tend to be less disciplined food choices. At night, you're often looking for a relaxation response. Food really provides that. So you put on the feed bag, you're disinhibited, you're making less disciplined choices. And oh, by the way, sometimes late at night, the availability of healthier foods is limited, particularly for shift workers. I know that in the hospital, when we used to work in the hospital, the food choices past a certain time of night were terrible. So it was a choice between take out Chinese or take out pizza. And those were not exactly healthy choices. The vegetarian or paleo restaurants did not deliver at 2 a.m. when I was working overnight. So those are some of the factors. Is it possible that, you know, that you see these advertisements and it sounds crazy? Lose weight while you sleep. Okay. You know, usually these are advertisements that are hooked into supplements that you can take, and effortlessly the pounds will melt away. The implication being that you don't have to subject yourself to a rigorous diet or exercise to lose weight. But there's actually something to it, is that you literally, if you increase your sleep quotient, if you're sleep deprived, you can actually change your metabolism and end up losing weight by the mere fact of sleeping more. Let's look, for example, at the metabolic effects of sleep deprivation or sleep apnea, which is a really common phenomenon. A lot of people don't know they have sleep apnea. If you sleep alone, you might not know that you're having pauses in your breathing, that you're snoring loudly. Sometimes it's just chalked up as you're snoring, but actually you're having these pauses in breathing, which causes you to have less efficient sleep. The number of hours that you log in bed doesn't necessarily correspond to the efficiency of your sleep. There's also something called SDB, which is sleep disturbed breathing. And oh, by the way, you think these phenomena are just restricted to adults? SDB, sleep disturbed breathing, is a big phenomenon in kids, and it's associated with obesity, abnormal metabolism, and prediabetes, which we're now seeing more and more in kids, and attention deficit disorder due to inability to focus and concentrate in class. So what are some of the effects of these forms of sleep disorders? Well, you have insulin resistance, you have lowered adiponectin, which is associated with risk for overweight. You have increased C-reactive protein. Well, that's inflammation. Your body actually becomes more inflamed when you don't sleep adequately. You get an increase in certain inflammatory cytokines like interleukin-6, which is associated with bodily aches and pains. It's often suspect in fibromyalgia. Now, that's a sleep disorder, and it's also a bodily ache and pain disorder that's associated with depression. And oh, by the way, high levels of IL-6 and are implicated in depression and mood disorders. You have increased leptin, which may have appetite effects, increased orexin, appetite effects. You have reduced energy expenditure, and you also have circadian effects, which means that you're awake at the wrong times, and all that leads to weight gain. That's the consequence of these types of sleep disorders. If you have, in terms of appetite, there's actually studies that show that if you restrict sleep, it leads to activation of brain regions that are sensitive to food stimuli. And how does that occurs? Through complex mechanism, leptin, ghrelin, adiponectin, and orexin and insulin. And there's also that witching hour effect, which is you may be awake at the wrong time to have a rational discussion with your refrigerator. When it comes to sleep apnea, there's definitely a relationship between obesity. It's a chicken and egg relationship because sleep apnea will tend to make you fatter. But also, if you're fat, you're more likely to have sleep apnea. That doesn't mean that people who are skinny don't ever have sleep apnea because sometimes there are structural problems with the palate, alignment issues where very slim or even underweight individuals can have sleep apnea. But in general, you know, when we do a physical exam, we look at people's neck circumference because in women, a neck circumference greater than 16 inches or in men greater than 17 inches is highly correlated with the incidence of obstructive sleep apnea. I consider myself a slim individual and I wear a 16-inch shirt collar. So, you know, when I go shopping, it's very common for me to see 17-inch, 17.5-inch, 18-inch shirt collars and more. And that puts one at much higher risk of sleep apnea. What's interesting is that in sleep apnea, how do you treat it? Well, you treat it with devices that literally push air past your obstruction into your lungs. You can treat it with surgery. You can treat it with palatal realignment. You can treat it with dental appliances. But actually, diet change and weight loss is considered a first-line therapy in sleep apnea. So, you know, it's recognized that diet helps that. You could literally diet, lose weight, and your sleep apnea will be relieved. I see it all the time. And in particular, I put patients on a low-carbohydrate diet. I'm not an original observation by me. Dr. Atkins, my predecessor, noted this long time ago, is that many of his sleep apnea patients responded to a low-carb diet. Remediation with CPAP. CPAP is the breathing apparatus that's often given to these patients. Some patients find it difficult to use. But this allows you to sleep better. What's interesting is you use CPAP. You don't instruct the patient to change their diet. Put them on CPAP. They actually lose weight. Why do they lose weight? Because the hormonal and metabolic effects of sleep deprivation are ameliorated by the CPAP. And even a person not intentionally going on a diet make better food selections, will have an improved metabolic handling of the foods they eat, and thereby lose weight. Talk a little bit about, I did before talk about reactive hypoglycemia and sleep. We do glucose tolerance tests in our office, and what we see initially is that patients will come in, and we give them a big dose of sugar. It's an artificial kind of thing. But initially, they're sleepy. They actually, you know, tend to fall asleep and relax. But a few hours later, they become restless. They sometimes get sweaty. Sometimes they get shaky. And they get nervous. And that's when blood sugar is the lowest. Now, I actually first noticed this when I was in my medical training. I was an intern at the Manhattan VA Hospital. And at that time, they give us all a crappy jobs. And one of the crappy jobs was to monitor diabetics who were just being admitted to hospital. And usually diabetics who are admitted to hospital, they come in with sky-high blood sugars, but they get overtreated. So we have to make sure that they don't go into sugar shock, which is profound or serious hypoglycemia. So we would have to go around and draw their bloods at 2 or 3 in the morning. And this was an unpleasant task because you walk into a room. In those days, they had literally barracks. They had like 24 beds, like in an army barracks at the Manhattan VA. And you'd go around from bed to bed, and hopefully you'd get to the right patient. You'd, you know, check the patient's arm bracelet. And the patients would be literally sleeping while we drew their blood, like vampires. And you could... I began to play a little game with myself to estimate the blood sugar of some of these diabetics. And patients who were sort of whimpering and having restless sleep, tossing and turning, sort of a nightmarish quality of their sleep, often when we deliver the blood to the lab, in those days it took a while for us to get blood sugar results, an hour later we get a call from the lab, stat, blood sugar 37, blood sugar 32. You know, a patient with initially high blood sugar would have a hypoglycemic response, and that was reflected by restlessness, sweatiness, and disturbed sleep. So clearly, this can occur in non-diabetics. You eat a lot of sugar, blood sugar skyrockets, then it goes down and it actually overshoots the mark, goes below the initial level before you took in the sugary substance. Solution is a low glycemic index diet with meal timing. In other words, eat a combination of protein, carbohydrates, and fat with snacks sometimes to ameliorate the effects of hypoglycemia. That's our so-called hypoglycemia diet. Okay, cortisol. Well, cortisol is something that... is produced in stress. And a lot of us are walking around highly stressed. And it's been shown that enhanced adrenal secretory activity usually precedes the occurrence of light sleep or wakefulness, which is in accord with the awakening effect of plasma cortisol. You see, people's cortisol is usually highest in the morning. That's what wakes us up. But if we can't turn off our cortisol, our bodies will feel alert and you'll have trouble getting to sleep. And we know this because if you give prednisone, patients sometimes requiring steroids for various conditions, it interrupts sleep and it promotes weight gain. Cortisol antagonizes melatonin. It promotes carbohydrate craving. For sure, some of you know this. If you've ever been on prednisone, you want to eat a lot of desserts and sweets. And high cortisol is, of course, associated with fat around the midsection, abdominal adiposity, and insulin resistance. And one of the things that happens when you have obstructive sleep apnea, it is a stressful condition because if you feel like you're about to suffocate, even on a subconscious level, your body produces a lot of stress hormone. And so you get very high cortisol, and that cortisol is part of the reason why patients who are in respiratory distress at night have a lot of trouble getting restorative sleep. All right, this is a good point at which to pause. We generally divide these podcasts into two parts. In just a moment, for many of you, hopefully you'll join us for part two, we'll talk about some of the dietary interventions that can actually help to promote sleep. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's clinical focus is on nutrition and sleep. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.